Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
The following is a presentation of the 4Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the 4Center podcast feed, and this episode is Q's of the F. No, it's Q's of the Force. Questions of the Force. We can say full words. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
Questions of the F could work as well on a different podcast feed, but we've got A's for you Q's here today.
That's right. Welcome to the F stands for family friendly, right? Q's of the Force. As always, today's family friendly Force episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Path to Deceit by Tessa Grattan and Justina Ireland, a great High Republic adventure we'll be diving into eventually. If you want to be all caught up with us and listen to the story, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. Now, we recommend a Star Wars audiobook on almost every episode of 4Center. So I know for regular listeners, it might get to be like, we know about the audiobooks. I've been doing some of the financial back end work of 4Center, and just wanted to throw it out there again that, hey, this really helps us. If you are interested, if you want to try it out, it's a free audiobook, and it really, honestly, sincerely makes a difference. It can add up fast and make a big difference. So if you're at all curious and want to check out one of these audiobooks, it does help us. Ken, we do have another ask.
Speaking of helping us, we'd love you to help us on YouTube. We're trying to grow over there as we put some energy into YouTube. You know, 2022, 2023, YouTube's been around long enough. It seems like it's going to stick around. We're having a lot of fun over there. We got some new shows coming, figure fights. We got some Force Center essays, more live shows. And because of all this, we're asking you to help us get to 7,000 subscribers. That's our next kind of plateau. We're getting closer and closer. So if you want to consider helping us, head on over to YouTube. You don't even have to watch the videos. Just subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a notification bell hit. And help us grow the channel over there on YouTube.
Excellent. Yes, we are very, we talked a bunch about some stuff that has come to YouTube right before we recorded this episode. So if I sound distracted, it's because I'm thinking about future YouTube adventures. But with that, we're going to get into our questions. We got two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we go first to Twitter and Chris Lamb. Chris says, rewatching Andor, I'm struck by the theme of traditions and culture. It both celebrates it with the Eldani, Ferrix, and admonishes it with rigid Chandrillan practices and blindly receding into them for comfort, escapism, like Leda or the people of Ferrix in Marva's speech. Star Wars is great at portraying complexity in both sides of the coin of a topic, but for this theme, both in and out of Star Wars, where do you see the healthy balance of using tradition to provide structure, order, and community versus where it turns into a prison or means of escape? We're not starting with a light question, Ken. We're diving right into a big idea in Star Wars. And as Chris indicates, also, you know, kind of a thing that affects us all in real life, too, where we find the balance between old tradition and new tradition. So where do you go with this in terms of Star Wars, in terms of Andor?
Well, this is hard to answer. I found myself, I was like, how do I say this with any kind of elegance? How do I say this, you know, not speaking for other folks, trying to represent myself, my own experiences in the best way possible, but also tying to Star Wars. I love this in terms of Star Wars. I think this is absolutely what was at play in Andor for a lot of things. I think early on, one of the early trailers, Joseph, you pointed out, I think correctly and wonderfully about, you know, we got on this planet, Ferrix. I don't even think we knew it was Ferrix at the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of culture, a lot of, you could say, native or local culture, the Empire encroaching on that, and just kind of those themes that are at play a lot in Star Wars. And I think the show did a great job of that and showing, as Chris said, both sides, which I hadn't thought about it, especially in terms of like the people of Ferrix, Marva's speech, which I think is definitely comfort, but where strength is drawn upon. Mm-hmm. I think it shows up a lot for me. One of the big themes is in Star Wars is, you know, everyone matters without a doubt. But when you see a lot of overlooked cultures, like the Gungans and the Ewoks, the Twi'leks of Ryloth come to mind for me, of how it builds you up. It's a foundation, it's a core, it's your identity. It helps you know who you are. You can only maybe hope that people see the value in you, and maybe you have to go out and just kind of be what you know you are. I think look at the Ewoks and that. But it was Leia giving a cracker to Wicket that helped bridge that. Now to Boss Nass. It's all those kind of things at play. And then the flip side, and I'll pass it back to you here. I was even going to say the Jedi Order is traditional rules that, you know, you and I have been discussing a lot about the danger of it, how it can go too far, how it can trap you, this example. And then I thought of the Lumens in Jedi Crash, the Clone Wars episode. Ewat Ka holding on too tightly to some great ideas, both about their own culture there, pacifism, all that kind of stuff. You've brought the war to us, all things that you could probably nod your head and go, yeah, but Anakin's dying and the war is coming to you. How best can you protect your people and keep going? And how that might trap you in a way, or even So that's my starting point on it. Then we can get into real life stuff too.
Yeah, my starting point, I think, to get to Andor, which I think is playing with lots of great big Star Wars ideas and giving them lots of nuance and specificity and spending quality time down in the idea. You know, we get to spend quality time on Ferrix. So this idea of what are the beliefs of this culture? Why do they matter to the people? We really get to feel and experience. But I think, for a starting point, I really agree with you. I think that Star Wars asks us to continue to question our beliefs. And that, to me, is the sort of ultimate answer of Chris's question about how do you balance, you know, the great things about tradition, structure, order, community, and where it turns into a prison or means of escape, as Chris says. I think that's the story of the Jedi's fall, that they get too rigid. I think it's a part of Luke's story going into the sequels, that Luke makes these mistakes being rash and thinking about it as adventure, and Yoda kind of admonishes him to, like, take this seriously. This is really important. And then he does, to the point where he gets rigid, right? And then Yoda's got to come back and be like, okay, mastery, great, you did it. Relax a little bit, Luke. It's not all rules, right? And I think that interaction between Luke and Yoda is a lot of what this idea is about. That it's there, and I thought about the Gungans and the Naboo as well, and, you know, many other great examples of it. But I think really with, like, the Jedi, it often comes back to this story of the rules, the tradition, the order. It is all good. Those ideas are good. But if we become obsessed with the letter of the law and just blindly follow the law because it's the law, we can sometimes lose the spirit of, why were we doing this in the first place? What is the heart of the tradition? Why is it there? Let's not do tradition because that's the way we've always done it. Let's do tradition because we examine it and go, why do we do this? Does that still hold value? Does it still make sense in the moment we're in? Then let's keep doing it. Or let's let the tradition evolve. And I feel like that's been a lot of the stories with the Jedi of, like, you know, Ahsoka walks away and is going through in different parts of her story this journey of, what is the core of being a Jedi? What do I believe it to be? And returns to specific ideas. I think that's what's happening in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, of he's reexamining what it means to be a Jedi. And the answers usually come back to, you know, connection, hope, trust, helping others. And, like, that's what all of the Jedi tradition is based in. But if you just become obsessed with doing it because it's the way we've always done it, you lose the heart of it. And I think that's why Star Wars is asking us to question beliefs, rules, because they can absolutely be wonderful tradition, but they can also kind of rot if we don't handle them the right way.
Yeah, one of my favorite words you use in that is evolve, and the idea that, because I wrote down, just like, I put pro and con. It's like making a list of the good reasons and the bad reasons you might have or hold on to these things. You know, and it's simple stuff. It's, you know, pro, you got, it builds you up, buttercup, foundation, core, identity, all that stuff without a doubt. And the cons, obviously, it traps you. It's used to control you. You trap yourself. You stand behind it to keep others from you. And that's where I was focusing on this idea of, you know, you hold on to these things, you put these walls around you, and then you don't celebrate others. You don't understand the differences. It's important to learn the needs of others. And you're talking about evolve. And I think sometimes in even real life, when you're faced with the idea of change, progress, personal or more global evolution moving forward, you feel as though you're being asked to toss out all the things that made you, all the things that built you. And I think sometimes when you analyze it, go into your Jedi example, no, we're asking you actually to return to what is your foundation, what you are built upon, but just making sure it's in line with what you're actually doing right now. Otherwise, those traditions, we'll say even more than cultures, can absolutely be harmful towards others and towards yourself. You're not allowing yourself to grow. That's what I see a lot of with the Jedi. The Jedi led to their destruction. But I think even you know, with Cassian himself, tied to kind of the way of Ferrix, and there's a strength there. There's a community. There's a culture that's strong there. And I don't think that goes away. In fact, I think they all really find inspiration from that. But I think he was allowed, he used that kind of what was around him to hold on to something and not evolve, not in change until Luthen shows up and changes the game and everything needs to start to become something more. If that makes any sense. It makes sense in my head about what Andor did himself, his journey. He grew beyond Ferrix, but he is very much of Ferrix.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of different, as Chris points out, a lot of different examples of tradition in Andor. And I think for Ferrix and Marva's great speech about, you know, I think she kind of says it plainly. She's not critiquing the traditions or the community or the positive power of them on Ferrix. She's just saying, let's extend that to the rest of the galaxy. You know, what I see in Ferrix is that there is just such a strong sense of community. Everybody knows everybody else. Everybody seems quite clear. This is my reading of it. Things like that beautiful, you know, funerary stone philosophy. It seems like every single human on Ferrix doesn't just say, that's what you do when somebody dies, you make them a brick. Why? Don't question it. It seems like every single person there goes, we understand what that means. You know, we understand what this tradition is about, that we are all part of this community. We all hold each other up and we continue to do so even in death. We are never not a part of this community. We're always holding one another up. So like the why of the tradition is in their minds. And to me, that's when traditions stay strong, when they're examined. And I think what Marva's saying is we in many ways have it good because we know each other. We know the things that are different about each other. We know the things that bond us together. The time grappler banging out the start of our day and the end of our day. We're in unison in this beautiful way. We should take what's good about our community and extend that to the rest of the galaxy.
I think it's best summed by you take that funerary stone and what it means and the big why of it, and you take it and you bash a stormtrooper in the head.
Exactly. That's traditions evolving.
Well said.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well said on all of it. And Chris is right. It's both very simple, wonderfully complicated, both in Star Wars and our own world. So I never want to speak for anyone and their own experiences, but even some of my upbringing, you know, I can see with once you analyze, well, why did I do that? Let me actually ask myself why and what that led to. You might just change some things while retaining who you are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I ran into that with different adults who just wanted me to do things or believe things because that's the way it is, period, and didn't want it questioned. And then other teachers and mentors who said, let's look back at the why of things and do we want to keep doing this? You know, and I feel like the great other examinations of culture and tradition in Andor, like Aldani, I think is very much coded as in this classic Star Wars way, they're connected to nature. They have reverence for nature. They find meaning in the world around them, where the Empire, it's all mechanical and it's all just a resource for them to exploit. Right. So I feel like that is that story is much more coded in that, you know, the Empire's, you know, absolute disrespect for the Aldani's spiritual perspective. And then I feel like the Chandrillan one is really fascinating because we're kind of talking about what's the balance of, you know, the positives of tradition versus when they become negative. But I think the Chandrillan thing is kind of, I think it's, you know, Mothma and Vel having been a generation that questioned those beliefs and go, hey, you know what? We went back and we looked at the why of these beliefs and we decided that they weren't worth the utter trauma of being forced to marry someone we didn't love when we were children.
So, Aaron, looking at you.
Aaron. Yeah. So like, I feel like that's a story about like Mothma. Vel clearly questioned it and didn't do it. Mothma clearly questioned it, but still went along with it and is suffering for it. So I think it's a story of they did look at the tradition and question it, and they said, maybe this is a tradition that's not helping us. Maybe this is a tradition that's hurting us. So it's frightening for Mothma and Vel to see Leeta getting back into it, you know?
Yeah, which, as we discussed on the show, it's her choice at this point to this struggle that Mothma's got going on.
Yep. So we definitely talked about the Star Wars of it, the Andor of it. I think we've probably bled into talking about our real world takes on it. But do you have other thoughts on the real world balance, you know, for yourself in your own life experience between finding, you know, comfort and joy in tradition versus feeling sort of in rigid or destructive lockstep with it?
I think it is literally looking at writing down the pros and the cons. You know, I haven't done that in my life, but I think over the course of time, I think discussing Star Wars has changed a lot of my views, but also the power of reaffirming what built you, the certain things you hold on to, the light that might be inside you. I think that's part of this process as well. And I am someone, whether we be simply tech or, you know, what I was told every Sunday morning all through my youth, there was a lot of times that the walls were just up and it was easier to be that way. And once brick by brick, they start coming down. I didn't smash any stormtroopers in the face. The but I like to think I've become a better version of myself over the course of time. Not that other people that, you know, this is where it gets careful. You know, I'm trying to speak in general terms or what's just local to my own heart. But, you know, those who have, the ones who have failed to evolve, analyze. I can go to my hometown and there's some people who have the same hairstyle I knew them to have in 1985, right? Mm-hmm. There's just a lack of evolution, personal evolution. That can be dangerous. And I think the fear that I had to face is well, but I like this part of me. You tell me you have to toss it all out. No. You just analyzing why and analyzing where that goes. And if the Jedi had slowed down long enough to find that out, maybe they'd still be around and we'd have a different Star Wars story. But of course, that's not the point. So it's complicated. It's wonderful. And I love that Star Wars has addressed it through many forms of media.
Yeah. No, I really agree with you. And I think, you know, for me, it's important to find balance between the new and the old. I'm somebody who really likes history. I want mm-hmm. to see old buildings preserved. But I also don't want to be so stuck in the past where I'm like, Saturday Night Live was only good these 4 years when I watched it when I was 16, right? Music, there's no good music anymore. I think it's kind of a threat on both sides that Star Wars really wrestles with, the sequel trilogy in particular. Mm-hmm. I don't think the old should strangle the new, so it can never come into being. And I think the new shouldn't just obliterate the old, right? I think we should find balance. I forgot some of the themes of this show I wrote in 2008 called An Inconvenient Squirrel, which was kind of like a family-friendly Pixar-style adventure for the stage where myself and several friends played squirrels. But a friend of mine recently produced it for teens and was like having me go over the script with them a little bit. And was like, oh, I forgot I wrote all this stuff. But like the central thing is there's the tradition in the squirrel village that you go to this one specific tree and it tells you what your name is based on whatever attribute you are, you know? So like they might see you, Ken, and go, well, sometimes he's grumpy. So he's Grumpy Squirrel and that's his identity forever.
Yes, please. Yes.
And the conflict is there's the squirrel who doesn't know who they want to be yet, doesn't know what they want their name to be yet, and kind of like questions everything, and their father flips out. And it was really a play about these kinds of issues of you got to question traditions, and it's not about hating the old traditions. It's about making room for the new traditions as well. So you have a balance between the old and the new.
Yeah. 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 Love that. That's a great idea. Why is that not a Pixar film? Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just last thought, I was thinking about, you know, my own life and like what's the same, what's different of like things like, hey, so much time spent thinking about action figures. Right. And that's a tradition I've kept for myself since I was a child, but it's evolved and changed because it's not the 80s anymore. And they still mean something to me, but they mean something different. So it is the old and the new. It's allowing traditions to evolve.
Indeed. And you only get a better version of yourself down the line. We hope.
That is right. All right. Well, that's our episode. Thanks, everybody. Nope, we still got three questions to discuss. Great and deep question. Thank you so much, Chris. We're going to move on to a next question from Wookie Riot. Wookie says, in fairness, my day-to-day is full of off-worlders revering characters I feel differently about, but the other day overheard a kiddo about 8 to 10 telling his mom headed to the exit that it was morally questionable to have just flown a mission for Hondo Onaka. Thoughts? The youngling made me smile, as this is a common discussion of perfectly legitimate business people, but wondered your opinions on problematic characters being idolized. The varying knowledge levels of those who come to Star Wars, create new content, etc. Thanks, as always, for all you do. Some context. We know Wookie Riot, our wonderful listener, to be somebody who works at Galaxy's Edge. So I think what Wookie Riot is talking about is seeing lots of different reactions to the different characters who are present at Galaxy's Edge, and specifically talking about the Smuggler's Run Millennium Falcon ride that this kiddo was very humorously questioning of like, was that morally right, the ride that we just did to serve Hondo Onaka? So great question and very funny. Ken, where do you go with the specific Hondo question and the more general question of our relationship with liking characters who are maybe not to be idolized in the real world necessarily.
Oof, that, we might get to some deeper spots. Grumpy Squirrel Ken might show up. But first of all, I want to chat with this kid. This is an amazing kid. Yeah. 8 years old, 8 to 10. Mom, no, Hondo's done bad things. He has. With the Hondo of it all, there is a bit of an arc to that character that's slowly unfolded over time. You and I always remark, going back to the early days of the Clone Wars, he's definitely a pirate. He's funny. He's a pirate.
He's a bad, bad weak way to begin with, yes.
But as his character starts to evolve, he's not just funny Uncle Hondo. I think there's maybe you focus on, and maybe what I would tell this kid, though, I think this kid's probably smarter than me, but if we sat down and had a Ronto rap there at the restaurant, talk about how, look, you know, Hondo has honor. He's built on that. Let's maybe get the context of what led him here. How much was done out of survival? How much did he push it too far? And where does he end up? And I think in the end, he, in his own Hondo way, maybe chooses a side, and maybe you can build on that. Not unlike, say, Han Solo, for me, growing up as a kid, was who I loved. And I think Han is maybe less problematic as Hondo, just in terms of things that he's done. But, you know, we don't know all Han's resume. I can't imagine it was all peachy keen there, that he might have done some dastardly things. But that's where I'd start there. Then we can get into the characters that I think are misinterpreted a lot.
Yeah. I think starting with the Hondo at all is very fun. I admit I did not have time to kind of review the actual backstory of the Smuggler's Run ride. I've been on it. I know there's that. I can't remember what age level. There's a book that gets into exactly what you're doing. So I can't remember enough to speak to the morality of that specific run, whether Hondo's just doing a little something on the sly, or if he's, you know, if he's stealing from the powerful, or if he is robbing another family. I don't remember, to be perfectly honest. Can you remember?
I cannot. Yeah. I know through Rebels, everything, he's become more classically good, if you want to look at that way, but he's still Hondo.
Yeah, so that's the thing that I have a stronger opinion about. I apologize. I ran out of time to review the exact setup of the Smuggler's Run. It's called the Smuggler's Run, so it's smuggling, and I partook in it. I blew up a lot of TIE fighters, I think. But for Hondo's journey, this was a great journey for me changing my mind. I did a 180 on my Hondo opinions with our deeper Clone Wars rewatch and this last rewatch on Rebels. Mm-hmm. At first, I was kind of, I enjoyed him. He's so funny. The delivery is phenomenal. Yeah. But, the face turn, right? That's the wrestling term, heel turn or face turn?
Face turn, yeah.
I was not sold on his face turn when Rebels first was broadcast because I had, just watched him like do a lot of vicious stuff in the Clone Wars, kidnap children for money and such, and, be a true threat who can almost hold his own with Anakin Skywalker. Like, and then he was wacky uncle, right? Yes. But that was just a surface level thing. So when I rewatched Clone Wars, they very clearly build in Clone Wars that, he's a pirate. He is a bad, bad weakway who believes in that everybody is out for themselves. And so it's just, that's the truth of the galaxy. If everybody's out for themselves, I'm not really doing anything wrong. I'm just trying to play the game that everybody plays a little bit better than them, right? But then there's those specific cracks where he clearly does have a soft spot for kids. Even after the gathering arc, in the middle of the gathering arc, where he starts it by brutally and terrifyingly kidnapping or, trying to kidnap children to sell. He does take Ahsoka. When it becomes clear that the kids kind of need help, he has that soft spot, and has that real nice talk in one of the Boba Fett arcs when young Boba Fett is getting nothing but kind of horrific and hateful messaging from Mara Singh. Hondo's the one who kind of leans in and is like, hey, kid, your dad did have a code of honor, so maybe you want to have one, too. So I feel like the seed was planted in the Clone Wars. Then in the years between Clone Wars and Rebels, things are clearly not going well for him. He seems like he has not kept himself in tip top fighting shape. and it makes sense then that he would have had experiences where he kind of came down a little bit, and some of that selfish and cocky baggage got, you know, mitigated, and the part of him that cares, that is still out for number one and is happy to steal things, but a softer side of him is coming out with age. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me in the viewing. And, you know, I had kind of forgotten that it's a building block for Ezra's character, you know? Mm-hmm. Ezra starts off as also having that, like, everybody's out for themselves. Why should I join a bunch of rebels who are foolishly helping other people, and then quickly realizes, oh, that's great to help other people. And then he keeps seeing the best in everybody. You know, he sees the best in Maul. Yeah. He sees the best in space whales. He sees the best in Hondo. He becomes somebody who really connects and gives people a chance. And Hondo is one of the victories where he's still a smuggler. He's still a bad, bad weak way, but he legitimately likes Ezra. And, you know, by the season finale, he answers the call. He comes in and helps and fights with the rebels, you know?
Right.
So I think his journey makes a lot more sense to me. So I think I would stand up for Hondo a little bit more than I used to.
So maybe you turn around the line and tell this kid, keep watching. You didn't get the rebels, did you?
Yeah, exactly. Look, when his kind of disturbing horn beard gets a little longer, his heart shines through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how I feel about Hondo. But then there is this kind of larger question that Wookiee Riot is asking about, you know, I think like dark side characters, right? Mm-hmm. About them being idolized. I know you have complex and powerful thoughts there, but where are you at these days?
I try to divide it up a little bit and acknowledge that, you know, again, I've joked before, but I'm someone who has almost every version of Darth Vader released in figure form. Right. And, mm-hmm. and there's that part of Star Wars that is the cool side. And you know, without a doubt, I dress mostly in black these days. I know you do as well. And a red blade with black capes go together well.
Like, super cool.
Super cool. I had no problem with it. There's a lot of just the Maul design I love. And you and I are fascinated with some of the stuff with Dooku. I just think there is a dividing line between, yeah, I just, you know, I like a lot of Darth Vader stuff. I think it's cool when it goes down the hallway and slices rebels. And I'm okay with that. Seeing Vader go full Vader was pretty satisfying in a weird way as a Star Wars fan who spent mm-hmm. his whole life wondering that. And acknowledging that exists, I think, you know, just the balance. Talk about balance in the Force. Balance and making sure that the dark side appreciation doesn't just wipe out the light. I think in this era where you hear that term media literacy tossed around a lot, I think you see a lot of misreadings of things, and everyone's got a stream to get on and a podcast to make, which I think is actually great. We're here for that. It's got real world implications, and how you view pop culture is how you view the world. And if you're looking at if you can't get that Vader, that thing we've said a lot of Vader marches down a lot of hallways with all the power in the galaxy and never gets what he wants, which is more power and more destruction. And he's empty every time. I think if you miss that point and you just want to praise Vader for his power and you want to see more powerful Vader, that's your right to do so. I think I understand some of that love just on a surface video game cool level. But I just worry about how that bleeds into other conversations about life, and that becomes the danger. And I've had those real world arguments with friends where you can trace how you misinterpreted this particular scene. And one friend tell me, well, Game of Thrones just is an entire show teaching you that the only way to get power is through power. I think you've missed a lot of what's going on. Particularly George R. R. Martin, a Vietnam protesting Kent State era kind of student. I think you might be missing some of it. And that's where I get very serious in the real world about it. Pretty fast. Yeah. You know? But it's okay just to go, also, it's pretty cool that Vader marches down the hallway.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I'm with you. I think I like to think about it a couple ways. I think what is satisfying to view, because I think storytelling can be a place where it's safe for us to play with dangerous ideas and even, you know, mm-hmm. kind of enjoy them. Right. And have action figures of them and have bedsheets of them when it comes to Vader. I think that is a fine and wonderful thing. I don't think all storytelling needs to be. Here is, you know, a PSA where right people do the right thing the first time all the time. Not helpful or interesting, which is, I think, why Star Wars has a goal, as Lucas has said, and the storytelling has mostly continued in this path to offer solutions or choices when you're faced with dark things. And I think in order to make that story powerful and resonant, the dark things are sometimes really dark. Mm-hmm. And as a fan, you know, I have plenty of Vader merch. I have plenty of Kylo Ren merch. I love watching those scenes. I just watched Obi-Wan Kenobi and it's awful. It's a horror movie, but it's cool to watch Vader mm-hmm. walk down the street just mm-hmm. torturing and murdering people. So Kenobi knows what's coming, you know, yeah. He's murdering people just so Kenobi knows, hey, this ain't your boy Anakin coming. I'm Vader, you know, mm-hmm. That stuff I think is really fun. And having the action figures and thinking they look cool is for me fun in the way that it is fun for us to allow ourselves to play with ideas of darkness in a safe way.
Yeah.
And then there's the story. What is the story? And, you know, what are we being asked to consider? And I think that the part of the conversation that can get muddy for me is, you know, taking two of the big ones as example, taking Anakin and Ben, they were manipulated by bad people. They had horrific things happen to them and they had mentors fail them, not be there for them to make it through this. And in that way, they are entirely relatable. I totally understand and I feel bad for them. They were victimized and failed. Mm-hmm. But the whole point to me is, and then they didn't see any way out other than giving into it. Hatred and anger and lashing out and causing other people pain, which does not fix their problem or anyone else's. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that can be the disconnect of like, of course I relate to them. Of course I think a ton of people failed Anakin. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, he makes his choice and he does not make anything better for himself or for anyone else. He just hurts people and continues the cycle of violence. So there's I'll have a million Vader action figures. I will tell you that the Rogue One hallway scene is one of my favorite cool scenes yeah. in Star Wars. But then I also want to engage with the meaning of it, of, you know, Lucas's Star Wars is almost entirely a don't be Darth Vader and here's why.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love what you're saying. And the flip side, I almost feel like I need to be fair. It's easy to point at those who are, who idolize Vader a little too much, but also I want in my stories, even in the high fantasy space opera stuff, I want my villains to be able to be villains so that the lessons can be there, that the story points can be there. There was a lot of discussion around some of the stuff Kylo said to Rey, particularly in Rise of Skywalker, that is bad. And there was a lot of people like, just how could this make it into the movie? Well, because it look at the context and look at who's saying it, look at why he's saying it, look what he's trying to get out of it. And I enjoy that as much as the other stuff. You know what I mean? It's a well-rounded kind of a Star Wars story for me. And so I defend that side of it too. I defend the villains being the villains, but I think it's if you can't pull that apart and you're over there fist pumping going, yeah, Kylo's right. Yeah, I don't know, then maybe get
it. Yeah. Yeah, it can get to be a really complicated question. And, you know, in particular with Star Wars, there's something about Vader in particular where I think everybody gets who he is, mm-hmm. but he's just become this very safe way to play with the idea of you know, darkness. You know, he's bedsheets and socks everywhere. Lots of Vader. And I know that's just a larger conversation going on social media where we want villains to be able to say awful things so we can play with awful ideas. And that doesn't mean that the story is advocating for them, you know?
Yeah.
Kylo is saying awful things to Rey about what she should believe. And I think the story makes it pretty clear. That's not what the story believes. That's what Kylo is saying.
Yeah. And as a creator and a writer, you always, you know, want to make sure you're asking yourself, am I saying this the best way possible?
Right.
There's ways to approach it and there's bad ways to do it. I want to make sure I say that. But yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. But I am going to Disneyland soon, so I'm going to review Hondo Onaka's story, and I'm going to decide if I feel morally comfortable going on Smuggler's Run again.
I think you should put out an open call to this kid. We'll track down this kid, and he can meet you at the canteen over a Ronto Wrap. And you can find Hondo.
I can't. I'm so excited now to review the story behind this ride and and see how I feel about the morality of Smuggler's Run. Yeah. Any final thoughts before we take a break?
Wonderfully complicated. I wouldn't want it any other way.
Exactly. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we are back to take more cues of the Force. We're going to our patrons on Patreon. This one comes to us from Jonathan Curdy. Jonathan says, "Hello, Force Center. Ever since Tales of the Jedi, I have been obsessed with the possibilities of more Star Wars shorts series. If Star Wars released a short series about a particular Star Wars location, with stories taking place there anywhere along the timeline, what locations would excite you to have a show about? Two that come to mind for me, the Hall of Fame choice, Dex's Diner, and also the temples the Rebels operated out of on Yavin." Thanks. Those are Dex's Diner. Huge fans here. Love it. Framed as Dexter's story time, where he tells you about a different person who came into his diner and had a fight, would be great. But also, I just want to ask you, Ken, first about this idea of the temples on Yavin. So if you had a short series, I'm sure you could visit the time the Rebels were there, but go back in time. Those are ancient, right? The ancient Masasi temple, and see a little bit more of their history. Would you be into that?
Absolutely. The Dr. Aphra comic series, one of the runs touched on a little bit. It kind of starts out there post Battle of Yavin. It goes into a little bit of the history, but it's still a lot unknown, at least as far as I can remember. So yeah, that'd be great. And yeah, halfway through this question, Jonathan, I yelled out to myself, Dex is down. Oh, he got it. He got it. Okay.
Nice. So what else would you choose? What location do you think has a lot of story potential?
This is great. By the way, I want to shout out there. There's this comic run with the Halcyon, the hotel, thing, but there's a comic series that I have, and it's like one of those things you just kind of got. It was in my stack because of duty, right? I collect Star Wars comics. It's in my stack. And I read it, and I really liked it. I actually really liked it. It goes all through, jumps back and forth in time, and that ship's seen a lot of history. And is it a marketing tool to get you to the hotel? Sure. I want to go. And when I go, I'm going to have a little bit more knowledge and appreciation of the history that ship has, which is one of the ways I like to engage with Star Wars. So I want to highlight that one as well. But here's some ideas I have. The Jedi Archives. Just have Jocasta Nu sit there and explain everything and go through of Jedi that have come through. Is it the most exciting show? It might be a little NPR, but I think it would be.
I would love that. I love the character of Jocasta Nu. So, like, man, if she was just the host and it was younglings, but if we also traveled back to, like, the first time young Jocasta Nu walked into the library...
Yeah, or, you know, Yoda getting I have a question, and whoever's before Jocasta Nu, who's the archivist before? Like, yeah, it'd be a fun thing for me.
Yeah, Jocasta Nu is, you know, definitely portrayed as this sort of like the matron, right? The old respected. We see in the Vader comics that she's still got skills and everything. But do you think when Jocasta Nu first walked into the Jedi Archives, was she like a punky goth teen?
Yeah, I think there might have been, because it's easy. I guess the stereotype would be like she was kind of the bookwormy, quiet, nerdy Jedi that didn't know her place. I don't think you necessarily need to do that. Not every librarian is that, right? So she could be, Joan Jett walking in from 76 and with a growl and discovers that, you know what? I thought my mission here with the Jedi Order was one place, and now it's this. And I've... discover that this is truly me. That'd be an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, Jocasta Jett. There you have it. There's the mashup we need. I love that. I know I was on about this on a recent episode, but I just love to spend some more time on Naboo. I think particularly jumping around like real ancient history, because that's clearly a society that has, continues to evolve and is very aware of the current moment, but has a lot of, traditions and obviously just even in like the garments, the regalia, the statues, there's a sense of history that would be really interesting. It'd be fun to see the dark chapters of the bad times between the Naboo and the Gungans and what happened from different people's perspectives. You'd have more Padme stories. Let's see Padme try to guess the names of the birds singing. Let's get Paulo up in here. Yeah, why not? I know we've got in the comic books, I know we've got the Amidalans during the sort of Galactic Civil War-ish era, right? Yeah. So we could do some stuff in animated form. I think Naboo is a great resource, a great location in Star Wars I'd love to see more of.
I agree with that. Agree with that one there. I tossed a couple. I have a city, a planet, and a ship.
Right.
Cloud City. There's been content there before, but just in this official capacity, almost a Deep Space Nine in Star Wars kind of vibe, right? They have touched upon it in comics and touched upon it in wonderful ways. Mustafar's and just infinitely intriguing place for me. Vader's castle, again, I know there's a lot of the origin of it, the planet, what it was before, the mask of Momon, all that kind of stuff, but to actually kind of formalize it and put it into kind of a show or something like that, I'd be into that. Speaking of Vader stuff. And then here's a wild card one, the Millennium Falcon.
Oh.
And it's been around. There's, again, some storytelling. You and I were joking recently, the original Han Solo books, the original Lando ones, both featured the Falcon. But that's a ship that's been a lot of spots. You could get, here's what I would want. I would want the series to start with whoever was flying it into port on Coruscant in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And where did Lando find it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that could have been Lando. Could have been someone else. But just getting that answer and starting from there.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of take that if one accepts that as canon, that Lando's a little young to be flying it in Revenge of the Sith, I think.
Yeah. And there's, I think there is some storytelling out there of the Falcon through the years. I recall something coming out, so I'm going to have to seek that out to make sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, putting it in the show form is something I'd be interested in.
Maybe Hondo has stole it for smuggling throughout the years.
See? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, this one's almost a little bit jokey for me, but a show called Tree Trials, and it's just all sorts of different Force-sensitive people going through the Dagobah tree through the years.
Oh, there you go. I like that.
And do you have one more?
No, that's it. Cloud City, okay. Millennium Falcon. Yeah.
Cloud City I'm all down with, too. Man, it's just so beautiful. I want to spend some more quality time there. Right. Great question, Jonathan. We're going to move on to our final question from Justin Jacobson. Justin is referencing a recent episode and says, Force Center, and says, Jennifer Landa's mention of hot wampas has me wondering about these fine free beings. Are they sentient? Do crime lords keep them as ferocious pets like they do with rancors? And what do you think they look like without fur? Truly, the hard hitting question there at the end. Yeah, there's the wampa that popped up in the trailer for a Jedi Survivor video game that we all described in different ways. Clearly a different looking wampa, not on Hoth. And Jennifer really knocked it out of the park with that hot wampa.
Hot wampa. Yeah.
It's a wampa from Zoolander. That wampa is so hot right now. Some of Justin's questions are kind of straightforward from different Star Wars storytelling. Looked it up on Wikipedia. Wikipedia has a great section in the main Wampa article called Wampas in the Galaxy. their hides show up at lodges in Trandoshan from Trandoshan Hunters, the Clone Wars arc with a Garnax hunting guild. We see a Wampa hide on the planet Waska. Then this article also says at one point during the High Republic era, a still living Wampa was consumed by a Drenger. Good to know. During her childhood, Jyn Erso owned a doll resembling a Wampa. The TIE fighter pilot who flew under the call sign Black 11 was nicknamed Wampa. And in his palace, Grakkus the Hutt owned, among other creatures, a Wampa. That's from the comics, I believe. And then from good old Disneyland, a single Wampa hide could be found in Doc Ondor's Den of Antiquities on Batuu. So it is this weird thing to me, Ken, where we were introduced to them on Hoth. But they clearly have either made it out into the galaxy, or people have gone to Hoth and taken and hunted them, yeah. Or taken them off Hoth to be beasts of in bestiary and collections. So where do you go with this?
It's so funny. Yeah, my view of them is always a Hoth animal, but the Hoth Wampa will lead us forward. And then there's all these wonderful examples of Wampas being other spots that I wasn't too familiar with over the years. Look, a Wampa's not going to start talking to you, right? It's not going to do that. But I consider them, I don't know, dog-like, primate-like. I think there's probably forms of communication. I think I'd love to see like eight of them hanging out in a cave. I'd love to, maybe there's some wars between them. I do attach some of those to them. I'd love to see, I think it's possible, all the example Grakkus and all these ones, it seems that there's like this, a Wampa in captivity is used to, number one, it's negative for the Wampa, but maybe whoever, they'd unleash one in an arena setting or something like that, like in a video game mode. But what if you raised a Wampa from youth? Which I don't know what you call baby Wampas. Like I'm pitching that they're called Wimples or something like that. and you raise this Wimple going forward. Could it be like domesticated in a certain way? I got nothing that you want to, or that's a good thing, but maybe you rescue one. And, it's like those stories of, they were lost for years, but that lion remembered Ted when Ted came back to visit them. Would it be one of those sweet stories? Not the negative one, so they end bad. But Ted was eaten by that lion he raised. Now, could you change a Wampa's heart is the question I have.
Yeah. I mean, we both love the Rancor story in Book of Boba Fett where it said kind of explicitly, right? Like they are very strong and they can be amazing animals of power and in danger, and they're great at eating people. But that's not all they are. It depends on how you raise them.
Yeah. Um,
So I want to believe that the same is true of wampas. The fun thing for me with wampas is there are these kind of collection of creatures from the original trilogy that we, the audience, grew up with. So then over all the years of Star Wars storytelling, references pop in to inside the galaxy, right? Where you have things, I'm thinking Jawas, Banthas, Wampas, right? You have, you know, Jawa juice and things like that. And there is always that, like, well, now we know that Jawas are at least on Arvala 7, right? But like, there's always that, like, we, the audience, know that term Wampa, but how much do people in the galaxy know it? How far flung are these animals, you know? Which makes me really curious of, like, are they native to Hoth? Did they start on Hoth and did they get taken from there? Or is this, like, you know, a species that has somehow proliferated throughout the galaxy and those are Hoth Wampas, but Hot Wampas come from a different region?
Different. The southern Hot Wampa. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a headcanon that they all start on Hoth and somehow some of them made it out into the galaxy, or the legend of them made it out into the galaxy? Or do you think that the Wampers are many other places?
I like that they're still predominantly found on Hoth or cold weather environments, maybe. How they got out there, I don't know. That's a story to tell. But yeah, and that all other versions of them are adapted versions of evolution in play there, I guess. Wampa sheds his white fur when he goes to Tatooine. I think that's childhood bias there of just that's where the Wampas were.
I was laughing. Yeah. Sounded like where the wild things are, right?
Yes. Imagine a bunch of Wampas dancing. Yes, there you go.
Where the Wampas are, where the Hot Wampas are. That's going to be our Star Wars children's book we'll be pitching. I love that idea. I love the idea of Trandoshans, you know, just wearing so many furs on Hoth trying to hunt Wampa. So
like in Fort Ipso and on Vandor.
That would make perfect sense, right? I also just like that maybe if they started on Hoth and, you know, over the years, you know, a few smugglers have hit out there or whatever, that kind of thing, and a Wampa just kind of wanders onto the ship. Ends up somewhere else. Most important part of Justin's question, what do you think Wampas look like without fur?
I think having a Chihuahua that has half fur and then her underside, her stomach, and she has no fur. It's the weirdest. It's just funny. Like, really, truly no fur. I think Wampas are like little pink dogs.
Yep. I'm with you. You see those pictures sometimes of the furless cats. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I think they look cute, but wrinkled and menacing all at the same time.
Yeah. And the effect of it's like when I shave for the first time in years, people are like, whoa, like that's the feeling you get when you see a hairless Wampa.
Absolutely.
You look so much younger.
I hope Cal Kestis yells that at Hot Wampa. You look so much younger. We will find out. I'm sorry, what was that?
Did you dye your beard? It used to be white.
Oh, I hope it is a midlife crisis, Wampa, that's what's going on.
Yeah.
That is great. Well, that is our Wampa question. That is all of our questions. We're going to move on to our Power of the Light Side. This is a segment where we ask patrons for something positive about their journey in Star Wars. And we've got a couple of great entries that have come in the last couple of weeks, so we'll keep getting to them. Ken, this is an epic entry. We always encourage people when they're asking a question to, you know, or answering any sort of prompt to give us context. We like context. We want to understand where people are coming from, what their perspective is. I don't know that we can do entries this long all the time, because this is truly epic. It was sent in to us by Brian Babcock, and Brian acknowledged, hey, I just really wanted to share and I went long. And Brian offered a too long, didn't read version, but he had broken it up in three parts. So I figured, like, hey, you know what? Why not? Let's just share the whole thing. It'll be a great test of endurance for both of us. So, Ken, I'm going to read the first part, and then I will pass it off to you for part two.
Sounds great.
Are you buckled up and ready?
I took a sip of water. And I'm ready to go.
All right. Brian says, hello, Joseph and Ken. I want to start by apologizing for the essay. I tried to keep it short, but I just couldn't stop writing. I put a TLDR at the bottom if you don't want to read out the whole thing, which I totally understand. Well, we're gonna. Brian also says, one of my last cues of the Force, Joseph mentioned that he was always curious about the experiences of those who grew up with the prequels and how the movies were perceived. So I thought I'd take this opportunity to give you my experience as a lifelong Star Wars fan. Part one, The Force Awakened. I've mentioned it in a previous entry, but for the sake of recap, I was born in 1986, so the original trilogy was already wrapped by the time I was born. My dad showed me the films when I was 3 or 4, so I have no recollection of seeing them for the first time. I remember always loving them, but where my memory gets blurry is at some point I had basically forgotten about them, likely because Jurassic Park started to consume my life in 1993. However, Christmas Day, 1994, my entire family was over doing the usual Christmas traditions. Me being the youngest in the family at the time by a fair amount often had me feeling left out of conversation, so I'd often slink off to my room to play with my toys or Sega Genesis and so on. On this particular day, I felt like watching a movie. Opening the drawer to peruse the VHS collection, I saw the original Star Wars VHS set, now with hi-fi, and thought, wow, it's been a long time since I've watched these. And I put a new hope on. I was almost instantaneously sucked back into the world of Star Wars and did not take my eyes off the screen. One might say the Force had been awakened in me. After A New Hope finished, I immediately put Empire Strikes Back on, completely forgetting about reality or the concept of time. Once Empire Strikes Back was finished, I started Return of the Jedi. About 15 minutes into it, my grandpa walked into my room and said, "Geez, we were starting to think you had ran away. Everybody's getting ready to leave." I ran downstairs, said my thank yous and goodbyes, and ran back up to finish Return of the Jedi. As fate would have it, a few months later in 1995, I'd be walking through the Sears toy aisle with my mom, and out of the corner of my eye, I'd see this orange streak that looks an awful lot like a picture of a lightsaber blade. I turn, and there I am facing a wall of new and shockingly buff Star Wars figures. Luke, Han, Obi-Wan, Chewie, R2 and 3PO, a stormtrooper, Chewie again. Started jumping up and down on the spot. I just couldn't believe it. My mom calmed me down and said she would treat me to two. I got Han and a stormtrooper to do battle against. That's part one. I'm passing it off to you, Ken, for part two.
Han and Storm, that's a great plan with your toys. Part two, writes Brian, search your feelings. Fast forward to 1997, something I never thought I'd have happen. The opportunity to see Star Wars films in the theater. Not only that, with new footage, I saw each film multiple times at the theater and was in total awe each time. I love seeing all the new footage, and I thought it was such a unique experience to see movies I've seen countless times in an entirely new way. I had no idea around the time episode was nearing release that people generally hated the changes in the special edition. Now that I'm older, I could do without some of the changes, but overall, I still accept it as my versions of the original trilogy. I know both of you have stated that you were often bullied for your love of nerdy stuff. I, too, was picked on and mocked, but never actually punched or assaulted because of it. Mainly just open ridicule. It was not yet cool to openly love geek culture. I recall someone in my class telling me it was pathetic that I still played with toys when I was 11. The day before the last day of grade 7, I offered to bring in Star Wars for the class to watch on the last day of school. The next day, I brought a movie in to watch. Another kid stood up saying they brought in Men in Black for everyone to watch. When asked who wanted to watch Star Wars, I was the only one to put up my hand. Well, I love Men in Black as well. I was pretty hurt, and I'm reminded of that moment anytime I see Men in Black. I love that movie too, but yeah, I did that. That was the first moment where I truly felt like an outlier, that I was the only one left my age that still truly loves Star Wars. At that point, I started keeping it to myself. I think the lead up to episode one was the same for all of us. Throw a stone and you're bound to hit something Star Wars. The lineup to snatch up the new 3¾ figures, wanting to eat a Taco Bell and pizza for the character cup. I remember my mom driving me to the only Walmart near our house, which was about 30 minutes away, so I could see if there was new figures. When I finally got to see the movie, I was overjoyed. It seemed the love of Star Wars had returned for everyone. I ended up seeing it 4 times total at the theater. Of course, once again, having no idea that many people were maligning it until the VHS came out. Watching it with my mom and stepdad, the latter not really being interested in Star Wars, kept saying stuff like, "Oh, this is that Jar Jar guy that everyone hates." And, "Oh, those racist alien caricatures they were talking about on the radio." I thought he was insane, but slowly and surely I heard it more and more. When episode 2 came out, I was a moody 15-year-old. that was the first and only Star Wars film I left the theater disappointed in, because I was hoping that George was listening to fan complaints and making something more like the original films. Instead, he doubled down on his creative choices. I wasn't talking to anyone about Star Wars. I wasn't buying the toys. I feared I'd never get a girlfriend in high school if I was found out I was still buying Star Wars toys, and so on. I started to think something was wrong with me, because despite getting older, I still love Star Wars. I'd also like to add that I have come to love episode two. Now back to Joseph for part three.
Here we go. Part three, Rise of the Nerd Walker, is how Brian has titled this. When episode three was ramping up for release, I started to notice a change in people's reaction to Star Wars. Subtle, but noticeable. My excitement had returned fully, as well as my desire to buy the toys. I started being more open about my love of Star Wars, not really caring about what people thought of that. At that point, I was in my last year of high school. I had become one of those guys that could float between the jocks, the nerds, and the in-betweens. So I wasn't too concerned if people looked down on me for openly loving geek stuff. After the movie released, I suppose I became known as the Star Wars guy, because people I had never expected to talk to me about Star Wars started openly talking to me about it. Even the girl I had a massive crush on since the 10th grade, who incidentally was in the popular girl group, told me she went to see it and liked this scene and that scene. I was so taken aback, I almost thought she was playing a prank on me. Even a few of the other jock types mentioned that they thought it was awesome. I recall one of them approaching me and saying, "So the lightsabers in the movie are fake, right?" I said, "Yes, obviously." He said, "Well, yeah, I mean, they're not actually lasers, but they're just like beams of light. Like if I swung on at this table, it would just go through it, right?" I said, "If you mean what they use when filming the movie, the lightsabers are literally just sticks and they digitally add the laser bit over the top." He replied, "Oh, that's lame." And then he walked away. I think he may have smoked one too many death sticks. I feel that was around the time that geek culture started to take over, where it was becoming okay to like comic book movies, video games, Star Wars, Star Trek, etc., etc. And it has clearly been on the rise ever since. I know I have since embraced it on an almost unhealthy level. I have a Star Wars tattoo. I put all my old figures out on display, though I've since had to put most away to make room for my 47 in counting hot toys, 39 of which are Star Wars. I know, I have a problem. If you read this entire thing, I thank you and appreciate you. I love you guys and all you do for Star Wars fans. May the Force be with you. May the Force be with you, and thank you for sharing that epic adventure. Ken, one of the things that I love about this, besides all of just the individual interesting pictures and stories, is that, you know, our relationship with Star Wars, like most things in life, isn't necessarily a straight line, right? It doesn't go from I hated it to I loved it, right? It's complex. It's interwoven with our lives and what's going on in larger culture. So it's great to hear this this story of all of the ups and downs and when it found Brian.
Yeah, and I talk about the shared but unique journey we all have, and a lot of it runs parallel, but just different decades, right, or time, or, you know, I think Brian's about 10 years younger than me, right? So it's like, I experienced all the stuff he did, and it's there's comfort in that, retroactive comfort, right? Now that I know, I was alone on that playground at Margaret Hollow Elementary School in Rio Grande, California, but there was many others like me, and we were all battling through the same thing. And knowing that once Star Wars is in your heart, it is a lifelong journey that has some twists and turns.
Yeah. And it's just always great to hear the different ideas of, you know, people find it at different ages. I do love that, and the way it interacts with us, not just because of, you know, the age, but the idiosyncratic of when did I first sit down and watch those? And was it on VHS? Was it, you know, yeah. It's going to be increasingly, I was making too much noise and I was given an iPad and said, be quiet and watch The Phantom Menace. And that's how I first encountered Star Wars. That stuff's going to come up. But so it's great to hear what's different. And then it's so great to hear like what's the same. Cause as we were reading, like I had this instinct to be like, well, I want to tell Brian about what I thought of the Attack of the Clones action figures.
Yeah.
Because even though, you know, we went through it at different times, different ages, you know, some of it is the shared journey that you're talking about. That's that's so great to celebrate.
Yeah. A lot there. This is an epic story. I mean, any comments almost don't do it justice, Brian. And I'm sure a lot of people out there listening are nodding their head, going, yeah. Yep, get that, been there, done that in the most warm, wonderful, comforting way.
Yeah. So my final thought will say, I don't think it's unhealthy to have a lot of Star Wars action figures. Maybe that's my perspective as someone who has a lot of Star Wars action figures. But personally, I think it's fine. Any final thoughts, Ken?
Well, on that, I think it is fun. I think we all know when maybe, you know, it's too much, it's a storage issue, or, you know, I've done as much as I can to clean up my background on my shot, you know, so I'm not looking like I'm about to die buried in figures, but also that's what the other half of my room looks like. Right. You know, so it's just an aesthetic thing I'm trying to do. And I go back to the story when I was getting fully into the digital media world, and just around the time I met you as well, but I was, you know, doing Jedi Alliance with Maude Garrett, who was, you know, 10 years younger or so with me. She was a special edition Star Wars baby. I was talking to my buddy Scott Manson, just trying to, I got to figure out what else to do. I can't be talking about Star Wars when I'm 50. And he just looked at me and just like, well, why not? And his point to that was, we haven't got there yet. We don't know what that looks like. We're in a new time, a new era where the Star Wars is not just, you know, I'm a big G.I. Joe fan, Transformers fan, and there's been some wonderful things done with those properties, but those were designed to be toys, designed to be a little bit different than Star Wars and what George intended. And Star Wars, Star Trek, or Lord of the Rings, those big things, they hit our generations in such a way that going forward and collecting them is truly just, it's representative of who we are. And yes, can you have too much? Yes, I stopped buying Funko Pops, not because I don't love them, because I knew I needed to stop. I also needed to get food. like that's what it's too much. But it's trust me, there's still, you know, Joseph, you run into too. There's still sometimes the people looking down on you with stuff, and you know, I try to understand their perspectives on it too. But we are in a new wonderful era going forward where it is not just simply nerd stuff. It is just the stuff that truly built us. And I love celebrating that time and time again. It means a lot when you get that Leia figure, or you get, I'm looking at a Lego Wampa I have, right? Like I'm looking at my desk right now. It just represents what we learned and who we are. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I think as long as you are square with yourself about what you're doing and why. I've had some times where I took breaks from collecting because it was financial, or because, you know, maybe it was a window where like I was using the collecting to not think about other things that I needed to address. So I pushed pause, you know, and, you know, came back to it, and maybe I'll do that again. I think it's all about the personal. And yeah, I think it's great to think about, you know, we all can take things that we love when we're young to bring it back to our first conversation about traditions and evolving. We can all take things that we love when we're young, and our relationship with them can evolve. Final thing I'll say, I had a nice conversation with my dad this weekend, phone call about some of this stuff about generational change. And because he was telling me about it, like, I talked to this other guy who's got a Star Wars truck. It's everywhere.
Yep.
And he was like, but you know, when I think about it, he's like, when I was a kid, I like Westerns. And I got my first car when I was real young, and I had car magazines and dreamed about cars. And, you know, and I like this kind of music. He's like, and I still like all that stuff. So there's nothing wrong with it. Really great perspective.
Yeah, I could go more on it too. It's just fascinating study. I was watching part of that Moon Age Daydream David Bowie art documentary. It's more of an art piece than documentary. Just a great quote of him, like, you know, in our times, this is early 70s Bowie, like, my father got a job and went home to his family because that's all he thought to want. That's all that generation wanted. This generation now is searching for a place. It's searching for identity. It's searching for who they are. So our needs and our wants and our desires are a little bit different, and it's moving forward. And I think that's when a lot of this kind of pop culture stuff came in and spoke to a lot of people.
Absolutely. Well said. We could clearly go on, but this is a very fun episode of Cues of Force. Everything from hot wampas to the importance of questioning traditions and evolution. That's all Star Wars. Thank you, everyone, for your great questions. And thank you, Brian, for the wonderful Power of the Light Side submission. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, if you want to connect with us, share your own stories, all that good stuff, you can reach out on a lot of different spots like Twitter. Force Center Pod is where you can find us there. On Hive Social at Force Center. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram. And as we mentioned previously, YouTube as well. New shows coming there soon. Figure Fights and a lot more. Podcasts available in a lot of different spots. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Get a Star Wars shirt and tell the world you like Star Wars. Patreon.com/Force Center is where you can support us directly. Support me if you want at KedNapsuck, KedNapsuck.com. You can link to my Patreon page, new shows like my podcast of Blathering, Pop Rock and Radio, and a whole lot of other things. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. I'm still on Twitter. Love to Grow on Instagram. I'm on Hive. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on TikTok. You can find me all those places by searching for Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can find me on YouTube searching for Joseph Scrimshaw as well. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the ambiguous morality of Hondo Onaka, this has been Cues of the Force.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.